Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Thanksgiving is here. Sorry for the delay in episodes, but welcome to the 9th episode of the official Nerd Talk podcast, Geek Speak. I'm your host, Sean, and joined as always is my co-host, Josh, certified goofball, Rudy Rudolph. This is the podcast where we watch movies, make movies, play games, and more. What else can you ask for? And today, my friend here, Hunter Ferris, is known on TikTok as Wholesome Film Talk, previously Story at the Core, and has amassed over 25,000 followers because of his love of film. Welcome, Hunter, as our first ever guest.
Hi, Sean. Hi, Josh. Hi, people who are listening slash watching to this.
Yeah. For those who don't know, usually you can listen to us only as an audio format, but we have this on YouTube today as a video as well.
Woohoo! We talk like about that. Movies, and so we're on video so you can have a visual component to talk about
Crazy.
Visual media.
See, the only true way to listen to a podcast is by watching it.
So as I said before, Thanksgiving is here. It's tomorrow when we're recording this. That's awesome. Do you guys have any fun Thanksgiving traditions you do?
What do we do? We eat the food, as obvious, as you do on Thanksgiving. Sometimes we'll watch a Christmas movie. It depends on what it is. If I get up at 9 a.m. tomorrow, then I'll watch the parade. We'll have to see about that. And then maybe some Black Friday shopping. Maybe. It depends.
My family goes Thanksgiving caroling sometimes.
I've never heard of that before.
Oh, there's a song in my church's hymn book that's like a very specifically Thanksgiving song. And okay. It's a big, joyful, raucous, fun song. And so we go knock on our neighbor's doors and we're like, hey, we're here to go Thanksgiving caroling. And then we sing that song in 4-part harmony because that's the kind of family we are.
I love that.
That's very interesting. Never heard of that before, but I like that.
I like that a lot. I like caroling. I think caroling is so fun, but like people seem to hate it, I guess. I don't know. I like the idea of going and spreading cheer with song.
Same. And if you are the type of people who like learn to get good at caroling, then people really like it when you carol to them.
Right. So normally in this podcast, we also have what I'm now calling the sidecar of the podcast, which is our DCOM minisodes. So we're going through watching every single Disney Channel original movie, me and Josh are, Woo-hoo. And from the beginning of time, from the 90s onward. That's the beginning of time.
Time did not exist before the 90s.
Not at all. We're seeing how the biggest media company on Earth, Disney, catered towards solely children with a large sample size over a short period of time, seeing how many quality changes happening, seeing how anything really changes, and seeing if it does at all. And it's kind of fun to do. We just watched Halloween Town 2. That was a very fascinating film. If you want to listen to our recap of that, you can go on the previous audio, and the next audio after this will be Johnny Tsunami. So with that out of the way, let's talk about some fun little news things that happened over the past few weeks that have been interesting and noteworthy. First thing I want to say is that last time we recorded a podcast, we talked about Chris Pratt. We talked about how he was joined as Mario in the Mario movie, and then he got cast as another animated character about 2 weeks ago as Garfield the Cat in a new Garfield movie.
What is happening right now? This is so fascinating to see. What's he going to do after Garfield? I'm so curious now, because like if they're both really successful, he'll probably keep doing it. So I'm very curious what it'll be.
Honestly, I still think that Chris Pratt is like the perfect person to play. The perfect voice to voice Mario. Yeah. Like he's got those. He's got the right inflection of how his voice goes up all the time, and that has like these peaks and valleys to the pitch of his voice all the time. Just perfect Mario. Throw on an Italian accent, and that's what Chris Pratt's voice is.
Yeah, I think it'll work really well. He doesn't have to be like a phenomenal like, oh, it's a me Mario voice. That would only work for 2 hours.
No,
but the Garfield voice, I'm very
that is
by.
Exactly what I want out of him. like if he's just doing that Mario voice that Charles Martinet, I want to say his name was, that voice for 2 hours, I would love that. Like, just lean into the silliness of his voice.
I don't think Charles Martinet could do it for 2 hours. I think that like that level of Mario wouldn't work necessarily for a whole film, but Chris Pratt doing it might actually work really well. I'm thinking about that now. But Garfield is fascinating because it's like, what voice? Just his normal voice again? Like for Onward and Lego Movie, I guess, again?
Yeah, as for Garfield, no offense meant whatsoever toward Chris Pratt. I'm just like, that's not his role. He plays Golden Retriever gamer voice. He plays upbeat, positive character. He is the living embodiment of a Golden Retriever. This is Aubrey Plaza's role. It's just that Garfield is male.
That's so true.
It's Jerry Gergich.
I'm so curious who else is going to get cast in this. I'm going to say this. Kevin Hart will be a voice in it. I don't know as who, but Kevin Hart will probably be voicing it.
I would actually love to see Michael Cera as John Arbuckle.
I would love that so much. That's fantastic.
Yes.
Anyway, so we also on the podcast, we don't really say good or bad to anything. We say yay or nay because film is all subjective. There's no really objectivity in art. It's all preference. So do you all give this a yay or a nay to this news?
I'm going to give it a yay purely out of just, I need to see what this will be. Cause like you don't announce something like that and then don't deliver on it. So I need to see what will happen with it.
I'm going to give it a nay because I really liked Bill Murray voicing Garfield back in the day. And I was like, that was perfect. Why are we not just getting Bill Murray back? Like there's no better person to voice Garfield than Bill Murray. But at the same time, I do love hearing Chris Pratt's voice in anything.
He is a decent voice actor. Like he does a good job with his inflections and his like personality with his voice, which I'm actually really impressed with. Like in Onward and in Lego Movie, he had a lot of fun with the characters. But I think I'm kind of indifferent, but I'm going to give it a nay for the sole reason that this should be, if any Parks character, it should be Jerry, not Andy.
I would also love to see Nick Offerman. Nick Offerman say
something. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, that'd be great.
Like low timbre could work really well with this.
Yes!
That would be great. Nay, nay, yay. So Josh, you're outnumbered here. I'm sorry.
Man.
Josh, you've been voted off the island.
All right. Have fun with the podcast without me.
Another thing that happened, another voice acting thing that happened, is John Krasinski was officially announced for playing Superman in DC's Super Pets movie. And then also the trailer came out, but whatever. The casting. Did you guys hear about that at all?
I think this is a good fit. I think Krasinski is a good enough actor and he can bring that level of charm needed for this version of Superman. And I think even thinking of him like as a live action Superman, I think that he could work as well. So I'm fine with this.
Yeah, I saw the trailer, heard his voice in the trailer. I think Krasinski does a great Clark Kent.
Yeah.
Like his voice just feels perfect for Clark Kent. And I'm like trying to get used to his voice as Superman.
I think it's funny because I've been telling Josh for years now, I want him in the DC universe, but as in live action, as Hal Jordan Green Lantern, I think he'd be perfect. He's like my top casting choice. He has the comedic timing for it. He has like the physique for it and the seriousness he needs for that kind of cop role. I think he'd be great. But Superman, like picturing like, his voice, like his Clark Kent, I think works really, really well. He has this like kind nature to him. And I like that. So I'm giving this a yay.
Did you guys see the trailer?
I saw half of it.
Okay. You probably saw the half with John Krasinski. Yeah.
Honestly, at first I thought that it like Dwayne Johnson as Crypto wasn't going to work, but like now that I'm seeing it, I'm like, you know what? This actually like does work better than I thought it was going to.
Dwayne Johnson?
Yeah.
Wow.
And Kevin Hart is Ace the Bat Hound.
Oh yay! Oh yay! Sorry, if I may ramble for a bit, I've been wanting Ace the Bad Hound in a movie for so long, because like the mere, first off, having a dog in a Batman movie immediately makes that Batman movie better. The mere presence of Bruce having a dog is a great way to communicate who Bruce is in this particular version. Batman Begins is a much more emotional Bruce, so having Ace act in the role of an emotional support animal would really support, no pun intended, the kind of character that Chris Nolan is setting up in Batman Begins. in The Batman, it's much more of a detective noir story. Having him be like a bomb sniffing dog would be a great way to communicate who Bruce is. In Zack Snyder's version, he's a much angrier Batman. Having him be an attack dog, just giving Bruce a dog, tells us everything we need to know about who this Bruce is, because every Bruce has been different.
Yeah, I would love to see in like going the past in the Nolan point, I think Ace would fit really, really well in The Dark Knight Rises. Like that retired Batman is like having him by his side. Especially since it's literally Catwoman breaks into his house and steals his stuff. Being like, sick him would be great.
Absolutely. And I think that just like introducing Ace in a relatively mainstream movie, I think gives us a little more hope to have Ace in more live action Batman projects.
Plus it's Kevin Hart. That's fun.
Is it like contractually obligated that every other movie Dwayne Johnson, Kevin Hart makes, they have to appear with one another? Because like even in Hobbs and Shaw, Kevin Hart appears in it, and like it's only for two scenes, but like he's in it, and like I'm fine with this. But like, is it contractually obligated for both of them? Like, I'm just curious.
God, I hope so. So John Krasinski as Clark Kent in DC Superbets, yay or nay?
I'm giving
yay.
Moving on. This one's kind of funny. For GQ, Jacob Batalon said that Tom Holland would love to play James Bond. And he keeps saying, apparently on set, he keeps saying how would he be a great Bond. If that's true, fascinating.
This would be really interesting because I think that if Tom Holland did get the part, I think that it would have to be, again, a very different James Bond than what we've seen in Daniel Craig and all the other versions, which I think that's a good way for keeping the franchise going is by introducing these different kinds of versions of Bond and these different ideas of what we could expect from him. And like even Dwayne Johnson also recently said he would like to play Bond. Could I see that? Who knows? But that, again, would be a very different interpretation of the character. But I think that going that route of different versions, I think would help keep the character alive as well.
Okay, go. Hear me out. We get Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Idris Elba, Tom Hardy, and Tom Holland all playing James Bond in the same movie. It's Bond into the Bondverse.
Oh my God.
I'm down.
If something like that, I would pay money to see.
Oh, I'm not even a Bond fan, and I would pay money to see that.
That's the thing. Well, I'm not like, a Bond fan really either. I've never been a huge fan of what I've seen. As a kid, I watched things of part of either Goldfinger or Golden Eyes. And I was little, I'm like, this is fine. It's like my dad's kind of like spy era movies, I think, were why I watched some of them when I was little. And then also, I watched Casino Royale, and I know it's like people objectively good. I watched it maybe like 5 years ago. I'm like, this is fine. I was never a huge fan of these kind of spy movies. I don't know what it is about it. I watched part of Jason Bourne, one of them, and I didn't wasn't a huge fan. But I think just Tom's too young right now. I want someone who's in their 30s, 40s, who has that experience for that kind of character. Again, as someone who's not been a huge fan of Bond, I think that he could pull in people who have been a fan of Spider-Man or comic books. So he could pull in a different kind of audience. Like, I would go to see him as James Bond because I like Tom Holland.
So something that always weirds me out whenever an actor says, I want to play Bond, is that, like, half the time, they already did? And, like, why? Okay, now, please understand, I am coming at this having only seen one Bond movie, and it was Spectre, which a lot of Bond fans are like, oh, no, dude, I'm sorry. You need to watch another Bond movie. That wasn't the right... Anyway, I'm not saying anything against Spectre. I'm just saying that, like, that's where I'm coming from. What I understand of Bond is he is the quintessential gentleman spy. And so I'm like, when Henry Cavill said, when everyone's like, we want Henry Cavill playing Bond, I was like, he already did in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. He played the quintessential gentleman spy. I know he did a great job. I would absolutely love to see him coming back as Napoleon Solo in another Man from U.N.C.L.E. movie. But I'm like, why do we want him playing Bond? He already did. Or like Taron Egerton. I know nobody said he should play Bond, but I'm like, that's what Kingsman is. That is the whole entire point of Kingsman. So when Tom Holland said, I want to be Bond, I'm like, no, you want to be Eggsy. I know you want to be Bond because like Bond has this long-standing British tradition, but like if you just want to play a gentleman spy and you're young, go play Eggsy. We have other gentleman spies. That said, like James Bond has this long-standing British tradition. It's probably you know, kind of every British male actor's dream to play Bond. I'm also just like not really understanding Bond well enough to be able to say, yes, you are the right Bond, not the right Napoleon Solo. because to me, Bond is just a quintessential gentleman spy and nothing else. Also, I'm just, sorry, very, very brief rant. An actor saying that they want to play a character is just an opinion. It is not saying anything about whether they will or will not play the character, but it does give us fun stuff to talk about on a podcast.
Exactly. That's, I put it there because I also think it's funny because Jacob Batalon said it. Not even Tom Holland. Jacob said that his co-star wants to play his character. I think that's really funny.
I think
Jacob Batalon, wingman.
I think out of all of us, I've seen the most Bond films, and by the most, I mean I've seen all the Daniel Craig ones. And those films have tried to, like, I guess, redefine Bond, or like what the concept of Bond is, by exploring his character. And I think that that's good for this series. But I think that for Bond to continue, I say go back to that era of just like pure gentleman spy. Just go all in on it. Would Tom necessarily fit that? I don't know, but it's fun to discuss it.
I think in the era of Kingsman and The Man from U.N.C.L.E., in one sense, we don't need to go back to the old quintessential gentleman spy because we've already got that. We have other movies that just absolutely love the gentleman spy. And Bond's over here like, okay, now we can do other stuff. Other people are doing that for us.
Maybe we'll have to do a whole episode about like spies and spy movies then soon, because this is very fascinating to talk about.
Yeah.
But for this specifically, I'm going to say nay, because I'm not a big Bond guy anyway right now. I'm not a big spy guy in most movies right now. So that one already is not too great for me. But I think the idea of his is a little fascinating. But he's just too young right now. And I don't know if he'll be Peter Parker as Bond. Like, he kind of feels right now in the Uncharted trailer. He feels like he's just being Peter Parker again. If he can show that he can do it very differently, that'd be interesting. But right now, it's a nay for me.
Oh, I've seen Tom Holland have that level of charisma and command of, like, I'm in charge here, and I'm going to go get the job done, and I'm going to break the rules if I have to, but also I am charming, I am suave. Like, he can play a great Bond. I'm also just like, that's just eggsy. That said, I would love to see Tom Holland in a spy movie again. The last time that he was in a spy movie, he was not the spy.
I'll go and give this a nay, just because I want a break from Bond, because we've got Kingsman's coming out. There's probably a whole bunch of other spy movies down the line. Give Bond time to think of a new way to live in this world, like, you know, where the Kingsman exists and like all these other versions of spies and stuff, and find a new fun angle for it.
I like that perspective. I will say a yay, by the way.
Cool.
Because like Tom Holland is awesome and Bond is awesome, and putting the two together actually does seem really cool. And like letting Tom Holland lean into his sex appeal, just like Bond would be a great role for Tom Holland.
That's fair enough. Leonardo's piece that's kind of small, like whatever. Tom Holland is in a movie called Spider-Man No Way Home. A trailer came out a week ago.
Nothing. Oh yeah, that thing.
I haven't heard of this. Is this some sort of little indie movie?
Yeah, it's really small. From a studio called Marvela Studios.
It's not going to be that big. Like, it might have the other ones from the past, but like, who really cares?
But seriously, this trailer is for me as a yay. I'm excited for it.
Oh,
I'm
not gonna go too hard yay.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Look, if I get a nostalgia fest out of No Way Home and I get a multiverse out of No Way Home, I will be happy. It is hard to displease me with fan service and a multiverse.
Agreed. Also, I love Andrew Garfield so much as an actor. Like, Tick, Tick, Boom, we'll talk about soon. But also, just like, his Spider-Man is my favorite Spider-Man. And so I get to see him do it again. And apparently they also talk to Sam Raimi and Mark Webb for characterizations, which I think is really cool. I read that yesterday, yeah. So that if that is the case, I love that. Because just having actors wear costumes again and by the different director and writer doesn't really mean make it the same characters anymore. It just be different interpretations. So having the original creative teams even consulted is really cool to me if it does happen.
I had not heard about Sam Raimi and Mark Webb getting consulted. If that's true, that's really cool. I haven't been tracking the news like that hard on this movie though. I kind of gave up when I realized that I couldn't tell which things were rumors and which things were true.
Yeah.
My entire TikTok feed is just No Way Home rumors and facts and other things. Like, okay, look at this frame of the lizard being punched that's not there. That one Brazilian trailer has that scene with the lizard being hit with nothing. It's probably one of the Spider-Man being removed. Cool. We know they're in it. Just say it at this point.
I want to wait for the reveal to be in the movie. Like, and Sony knows that we know they're in it, but they're going to be like, let's save it for you, just for you, even though you already know.
Yeah, if Marvel and Sony are going so hard as to put Andrew Garfield on an NDA so that he can't say it. And if Marvel and Sony are intentionally hiding the truth and intentionally lying to us, there is a reason. And I want to watch it the way the director and studio intended, instead of just like being spoiled. The word spoiler is, has the word spoil in it for a reason. I don't want to spoil the experience.
Guys, I'm not the werewolf. Because he keeps saying constantly. Yeah, I'm going to say, yeah, this trailer is cool. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited for it. I want to see it. I like seeing the villains again. I like seeing potentially a version of Lizard and Salmon that actually might have died in this universe or something. That's really fascinating to me. I'm curious about this. So I'm giving this a yay.
I'm giving it a yay.
It's Spider-Man. It's a multiverse. It's fan service. I'm giving it a yay. Sorry, guys. I'm just finishing up making lunch.
No, you're good.
I love it. You're great. Speaking of multiverse, a video game we talked about last episode called Multiverses officially a gameplay teaser trailer. We talked about this last time and how we talked about how the rumor to like people like Tony Soprano or something like that. Because this is a game that one person is making that has Batman, Shaggy, Gandalf, Arya Stark, a bunch of random characters from different Warner Bros. Franchises.
I'll give them this. They've got enough characters to make a game like this work. But why it exists, I don't exactly know. But it's free to play. So, like, I can't really, like, get mad at it that much if they're going to go out of their way to say, like, yeah, it's free. You can play, like, for free whenever you want. So, I'm like, I'll give them props for that. Doesn't need to happen? Not necessarily. Am I going to play it? Yeah, I think I will.
So, as for whether it needs to happen or not, I'm going to give the very hot take that the world is better for having more art. And that the default should be, oh, yay, more art. And not the default being this art shouldn't exist and needs to justify its existence and is guilty until proven worthwhile. And I'm like, no, it's art. That makes it good. Unless it has like some extremely malicious intent, until it gets like Triumph of the Will or something like that, it is good that it exists just for the sake of being more art. My extremely hot take.
I agree.
I've never heard of this whole multiverses thing, and I'm not a gamer, so like, I don't know.
My thing with this is that I agree with that point, but it also feels very capitalist right now. It's just like, it literally just a bunch of random characters. Then again, so is Smash Bros. So whatever. I will say this feels like what the Nicktoon Squad battle game brawl, whatever, was supposed to be in terms of the budget and the way that they actually have voice acting. They actually have like proper like attack animations. They have actually a more clean version of what that Nick game should have been. Yeah. My biggest issue with this right now so far is that they have pick and choose random characters and not like groups from franchises. Like they shouldn't have Shaggy. They should have the Scooby gang. They shouldn't have Arya Stark. They should have her and Jon Snow and even a direwolf. Like you have like a bunch of things like how Smash Bros. Has like factions of characters basically.
Yeah. I will say it is kind of hilarious thinking of Batman just beating the crap out of Jake the dog or like Arya Stark stabbing Steven Universe. Like, it's fun thinking of things like that.
Or imagine Shaggy having to use 1% of his power.
It's funny to say that because in the game, he has the Ultra Instinct Shaggy meme version. He has all the powers of like the god.
Yes!
So I'm giving this a yay because I don't know why I'm giving it a yay. But I'll maybe Tony Soprano will be in it. That seems neat.
Sorry, I don't know what this game is. I can't really give an opinion. I do, however, love it when companies turn memes into canon. That is absolutely amazing to me.
It's great.
So this person here, Hunter here, has started watching Avatar The Last Airbender recently. He is on book two of Avatar now, and I think you're still enjoying it. Casting's happened. Daniel DeCamp is playing Ozai in the new live-action show, as well as they've cast Monk Gyatso, Admiral Zhao, and General Iroh himself. Paul Sun Hyung Lee is playing Iroh, which is what I want to focus on the most. He is in Kim's Convenience, I think. He's in many other amazing like shows and movies, and he's a hilarious actor. And he also has a good like serious tone to him too.
He's great casting for Iroh.
Yeah, like every casting that they've put out, I've been like,
yep.
You understood the assignment.
I've been very happy with that, especially with Daniel Kim's Ozai. He looks just like the actor playing Zuko, first off, like a father. He also has Ozai's cheekbones down packed. And also, he's voiced two characters in the Avatar universe already. He was General Fong in Book 2 Avatar, and he is in Legend of Korra as Hiroshi Sato. So that's pretty cool. I like these castings so far. I'm giving it a yay. I'm hesitant because the original creators left the show, but I'm still excited because the castings make me feel like they understand the characters.
I'm going to give it a yay because the casting clearly shows that they're putting in an effort to make this like an authentic version. Plus, like the amount of time it's been taking for them to make this instead of just like rushing it out like a year after they announced it. Like it's been 3 years since they announced the show. And like now they're finally starting to actually make it shows they've been taking their time to make sure that it's right. So I'm going to give it a yay.
I'm going to give it a yay. All these casting choices look awesome. I do not know the quality of the show. I have no idea how good the show is going to be, but I will say that the casting looked great.
And I'm not going to hark on too much of the stuff, but I know Disney Plus Day happened. Too much happened with it to talk about.
Yep.
Moon Knight looks cool. She-Hulk looks cool. I am excited for the I Am Groot show. Agatha and the House of Harkness seems neat.
I am most excited for Moon Knight. That gives me such Daredevil Netflix vibes.
I'm happy with this stuff that's happened at Disney Plus Day for the most part. I will say I'm a little bit bitter, but also happy about the Spider-Man Chronicles show because I wanted to make it instead of Disney. But I'm happy being made in the first place. More art. And one last piece of news for today. I will touch on quickly. Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo were cast in Wicked movie. Both great. But the news I want to talk about for a second is the Batman movie called The Batman.
Oh, yeah. What about it?
Barry Kay. He was in Eternals as Druig. I'm not going to pronounce his last name because I will butcher it. But he is officially playing an officer in the movie called Stanley something, Officer Stanley something, I think Kelmitz or whatever. But he's rumored to play a Joker in the movie, and his brother might have confirmed it on Facebook. And that's really weird to me. Hunter seems to not be aware of this at all.
I'm just like, do people actually think the Joker is going to appear in Matt Reeves' The Batman?
I have honestly no idea what's going to happen in this movie at this point. I think they've already have like three. They have Catwoman, they have
Riddler,
Penguin. So it's very long Halloween vibes.
Which is part of why I'm like, why do people think the Joker? Like, I get it. The Joker's popular. People like seeing the Joker. People always like seeing more Joker. I'm just like, I don't see why people think he's actually going to appear. There's a difference between we want him to appear and he's going to appear.
Right.
And like, I'm like, why do people think Barry
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Never mind. I'm sorry. I have never actually heard his name pronounced in real life. I've only looked at
But I'm not sure.
My guess with this is that it's going to be like a tease. Like, we'll see his character in this to who knows how much of a degree. And at the end of the movie, something will happen and he'll fall in a vat of acid and turn into Joker. Could be something more along the lines of that, but he won't be an actual character for the film.
It could be a post-credit scene tease of we want to have more movies and he'll be the next one.
Don't think he's going to be the I think he's just going to be a character.
Agree.
They've basically wrapped on photography at this point. There's no way they're still casting for somebody as big as the Joker. I think he's just going to be there.
The rumor is apparently that also in the first two screen tests, he was not Joker in it yet. And the third one, he was. As well as the fact, apparently, I'm not reporting what was reported. It's not like me saying this as a fact. His brother made a joke on Facebook or something saying, hey, I guess the news is out that my brother is playing the Joker. And I think he meant it as a joke. So people are like, it's fact now. I'm like, no, I'm giving this. The idea of him playing Joker, I think, would work. I think in paper, he's a good actor and could do it. But I don't want it in this movie.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that this could be an interesting casting for Joker, but I don't think it's going to happen.
I'm going to be that guy. There is only one person who can confirm a casting choice or a plot detail. And that is a decision maker on the film. Barry is not a decision maker. He's an actor. Now, he can make the decision to play the character, but it's not like he's the director or the studio or the writer or even the casting agent or anything like that. He's not in charge. And his brother is definitely not in charge. I will believe that he's playing the Joker when it is confirmed that he's playing the Joker from a decision maker. But like, I don't know, if say Hugh Jackman said, I'm appearing as Wolverine in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, I'd be like, yeah, you might be, but you're not the one to say that. Sam Raimi is the person to say that, not the actor.
Yeah, I agree.
I do think that he, as an actor, fits very well into Matt Reeves' universe. Like, he fits very well in that tone.
Yeah, I think he would do great. As
Officer Stanley.
Sure. Nay, I think it's very much a rumor, not actually a fact. But I wanted to bring it up because it was a very like prominent thing like, all over like online news sites.
Yeah, I don't like feeding too much into rumors like this, so I'll give it an A because like who knows.
Barry playing in the movie? Yay. Barry playing Joker? Nay. That's not news. It's a rumor. There's right. a difference between rumors and news. Like I'm sorry. Apparently in film discourse, we did not have enough lessons as children about the importance of not spreading rumors and not starting rumors. Like, did anybody here have any of those, like, really cheesy PSAs as kids about why not spread rumors? Or, like, did anybody here have their mom say, hey, don't spread rumors, it's not nice? Like, I'm not trying to be a jerk. I'm not trying to be rude. I'm just, like, we already learned this lesson as kids. Maybe we forgot. It is entirely possible that we forgot, or maybe we thought that we'd grown out of the need to not spread rumors. I'm just, like, these are still actual people. And they are still rumors.
That's a very good point. How actors are people you're spreading rumors about. Like, whether it's true or not, it can affect their life. Like, first off, like the Andrew Garfield thing, which we'll get into about TikTok in a minute. But, like, as Spider-Man, he's asked nonstop, are you in this movie? And that's still, you're talking a rumor about him to his face constantly. It's a lot to deal with.
And on top of that, he's like, I am not here to talk about Spider-Man. I'm here to promote TikTok.
Right. And speaking of TikTok, let's talk about TikTok. What a movie. Whoa!
Good movie, I like.
What a good segue too, just then.
All right,
so where did we get? I love this so much. So this good.
This is really, really good. I loved it.
Hunter, do you have background at all in theater or musical theater or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. I did some community theater in, like, junior high. And, like, I've been around theater kids all my life, and I've been involved in theater to some degree all my life, and, like, got to do a little bit of musical theater specifically in junior high. I'm also currently writing a musical.
Whoa!
So, like, TikTok really hit home for me, because, like, the whole time I was like, I feel that I relate to Jonathan a little too much.
Josh and I watched it the other night at, like, 2 a.m., good plan.
Yes.
We have class next day. It's fine. This is a fantastic movie, but more than just that, it's like, it's a love letter to musical theater. And, like, I think you made a TikTok about this yourself, Hunter. But, like, this movie, I loved it for not the reason that a lot of people probably love it, of, oh, what a good story and stuff. No. This movie feels like they're putting on the show in a way I've never seen on screen before. Like, Into the Woods, the difference is they adapted the script and music and put it on screen. For movies like Dear Evan Hansen, they try to adapt the story and the music put on the screen, like adapt for film. No. They didn't adapt this for film. They did this show, but made it in a movie format. For instance, TikTok originally is a one-man show. And it gave me, I got the vibe of that a little bit because I thought about the show I saw, This Wonderful Life, which is a one-man show retelling of It's a Wonderful Life. And it's really fast. It's a great play. But this reminded me of that a lot because in this show, in this movie, we have the Andrew Garfield playing Jonathan Larson on a stage doing the TikTok to an audience, and we see the audience and we are put in the position of that audience. So we are in the audience watching his show as he's retelling the story and narrating the story that's happening and intercutting with the story. And it's almost as if Andrew Garfield's movie is playing an actor playing Jonathan Larson doing TikTok. And it's amazing. Because it really puts us in the seat.
So the way I saw it was that the stage performances were kind of the narrative framing device. And that after having gone through all this experience, Jonathan gets to tell his experience to an audience in the form of a stage play and then in the form of a movie. And, like, the very presence of this movie feels like everything Jonathan would have wanted.
Right. I said to Josh, this is the only movie ever, only movie, musical, or adaptation of a play that's ever given me the same feeling I've gotten while being in an audience or even close to it for a show, because it does do that. It's like the narrator on a stage is usually someone who comes on the stage while things are either happening or pauses that people freeze frame. He talks about it or sings about it and then cuts back to them and they keep doing things again. And it felt like that. It felt like he is a narrator trope, the way they do it in a stage and not the way they do it in a movie. Because he's visibly there. He's acting and performing and giving his all like a theater performer does. And it's recounting his life in this fascinating way. But also, this does play with diegesis a little bit because in diegetic content and film, anything that's in the universe like diegetic sound is sound that's like playing in a device in the film, whereas non-diegetic sound is like a score that the character's going to hear. Like in The Greatest Showman, there's a scene where characters start singing, and then on screen, they don't sing anymore, but they start to keep singing in the soundtrack. I hate that, because if you're doing a musical, let the characters... They can keep singing because that world is already funky and weird because it's a musical. let it exist like that. And they did that here, like at the diner, they're all singing, people turn to them and start singing along to, and that stays consistent the entire time. It's like the entire thing is a Broadway show, but in that world. And it's so amazing to watch that way.
One of the things that I kind of love about Tick, Tick, Boom is that like Tick, Tick, Boom is what I want movie musicals to be. In the sense of like a musical in and of itself is an inherently formalist medium. Formalism, for people who don't know, is the opposite of realism. Realism being the philosophy that the purpose of film is to accurately capture and portray life. Whereas formalism is the belief that the purpose of film is to capture things that cannot be in real life. So think of, you know, any movie ever these days. We have not had a movie try to be realistic in decades. Last movie I can think of that was trying to be realistic was like back in the 50s. But like nowadays, formalism is kind of the norm to the point that people think that's what realism is. No, like we are living in an era of mundane formalism. Anyway, musicals are an inherently formalist medium. They cannot and should not be realistic because one of the strengths of musicals is that it allows you to play with the form of film in ways that no other genre does. You get to have characters being using diegetic sounds in universe in rhythmic ways, in ways that like no other genre can. You can't have, I don't know, think of the "This is the life of Bo 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 Bo." Mm-hmm. Think of that whole scene and everybody joining in. That can't be in a movie that isn't a musical. Or think of the diner scene, how to represent how Jonathan feels trapped and how Jonathan feels like if he just gets on Broadway, then he'll be free from this diner. They have the wall of the diner fall off and Jonathan walks out of the diner through the wall. Like, that is a perfect way to represent.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Present that through subjective filmmaking and formalism, and that's like what movie musicals are built to do, and it's wonderful. They just really lean into that. Do they lean all the way into that? No, it's not Speed Racer, but they really lean into that in ways that, like, I would love to see more movie musicals do. If more movie musicals are like Tick, Tick, Boom, this will become my favorite genre.
And none of that felt out of place. The diner coming apart, that felt natural, and I believe that it was happening but not happening. Like, I walked on screen and believe that on stage that would happen and it'd be okay. The diner actually doesn't fall apart and come back together in real life.
Yeah, like the main thing about Tick, Tick, Boom and movie musicals and just like communicating that feeling is that like you need to get across the idea that this is not what's actually going on in universe. This is simply how the filmmakers are choosing to portray what's going on in universe, whether it's how the character feels or what the character is saying or whatever else.
Go ahead, Josh.
No, this has been fascinating just listening to this whole discussion. What I love about movie musicals, when they're done right, I love how they embrace the non-realism of it all. I forgot the word.
Formalism.
Oh, formalism, yes. Embracing the formalism of the medium of both film and musicals and just being like, this is how it is. This is what it's going to be. Like, the first time I felt that in a very long time watching a movie musical was La La Land. Like, the whole opening musical number of that is like on this highway, everyone's just singing and dancing, and then everyone gets back in their car. And then there's multiple dance sequences that are just through time and literal space. It's so formal in just everything that it does. And I fell in love with that. And then the last time I saw that before Tick, Tick, Boom was the original version of West Side Story from the early 60s. Because, and like to Sean, I felt like that's probably one of the best representations of adapting musical to film, because while it was a good film, it felt like a very good adaptation of the show. I felt like I was watching the show happen before my eyes, just with the way that it was framed and the way the numbers were done, but still embracing the film format of itself and never being ashamed of that. But what I don't like about the movie musical genre is what Disney's been doing to it outside of the animated films. They do not like to embrace the formalism of it, despite it being, you know, movies about genies and beast mans and literal talking lions. They feel ashamed to want to embrace the formalism of it all. And it really makes me sad that they've made so much money, but they've kind of twisted how people see musicals, movies. But like with Tick, Tick, Boom, going back to that realm of formalism, like, makes me really happy. And that the fact that people have been embracing this movie as much as they have really, really makes me happy.
I want to touch on one thing you said. That's one thing I thought was fascinating about In the Heights, because it didn't always fully embrace it to me. And like Limerick,
that's weird. I felt like it did for like almost every musical number.
Like, I didn't feel like consistent with the world it was around it, though. That's my biggest issue with that. I wish it was all consistent style of how the world understands musical environment. Like, you know, on Broadway show, no character will ever walk on stage and not understand the singing.
Yeah.
Or not understand what's going to happen. And In the Heights, or like a lot of movie musicals now, some characters aren't in the loop in that world, I guess, aren't a part of that same environment. Well, first off, for anyone who doesn't know, what is Tick, Tick, Boom about? Because we have an audience here who probably has never seen this movie yet, and we're just ranting about this movie, who people might not have seen it.
It's fine. They don't need to know what it's about.
Tick, Tick, Boom is about a 30-year-old Jonathan Larson who would later go on to write the musical Rent. When he's, you know, struggling to pay his rent. Specifically, he's on the cusp of his 30th birthday, feels like he hasn't done anything with his life, is almost done with his first musical, and feels like his life is just falling apart around him as he's finishing this musical. Whether it's losing his best friend, one of his friends going to the hospital with AIDS, he and his girlfriend having relationship struggles, and trying to find a place of creativity in a world of stress.
I also love that, like you were saying earlier, a giant love letter to musical theater. And I think that's because of the amount of creatives behind it. You have Lin-Manuel Miranda, you know, who created In the Heights and Hamilton. This is his first time as director. The screenwriter, Stephen Levinson, he created Dear Evan Hansen, and has written a bunch of other musical stuff. And then, of course, this is based on a musical by Jonathan Larson. So, like, all of that combined together, it works so well.
We haven't really touched on the performances yet. Andrew Garfield is phenomenal in this role. He understands all the tics and habits of Jonathan. The way he plays it just feels so natural and realistic. You can understand and really feel his perspective the entire time. You understand why he's pushing aside people in his life. You understand why he's so stressed out, his paranoia. You feel for him and you want him to succeed, but also want him to connect with people better. Like, you understand all of that. And it comes across because of his nuance and his performance is so well done.
On the topic of the performances, gosh, I cannot remember his name. I want to say his name is Rafael De Jesus, the guy who plays Michael.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen this guy in a movie before. Me either. Like, I look through his IMDb and like, I've literally never seen him in anything. I love this guy. Like,
he was great.
I want to see this guy in more stuff. Vanessa Hudgens had so much just charisma in this. She just like oozed charisma through the entire movie. Alex Shipp is always great.
Yep.
The musical is about him writing a show, which Superbia. Is Superbia. Yeah, Superbia. Very fascinating, because actually the plot of this is, at its core, is he's writing Tick, Tick, Boom, basically. It's the journey of how he got there.
I also talked to you briefly about this, Sean. It's fascinating seeing an artist write something about themselves while they're still alive and still in that process of, like, getting to that heights of eventual greatness that they have, how this doesn't feel egotistical. Cause like this very much could have come off as like, I'm the greatest that there ever was. Everyone's just wrong. But it felt very real and very human that he is aware of his own flaws, but also of like what he can do well. And I think that Lin-Manuel also understood that with directing it. And I think that it came across very well as Andrew's performance, of course.
Yeah.
Which is something that I kind of love about, we were talking about how it's a love letter to musical theater. So like, I was saying in my TikTok that this is not a celebration of Jonathan Larson. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't saying that Jonathan Larson is good, but it is a love letter to Jonathan Larson. It's saying, Jonathan, you are flawed, but we love you. We want the best for you. You can feel this fondness and affection while not feeling like a celebration or propaganda film.
Jonathan apparently plagiarized a decent bit of the show Rent, but also, it doesn't really, at the end, like, he put on a show that at the same time put more people of color on stage, put more people, or queer people on stage. He did a lot of good work while also doing flawed things. And like, that's how humans work all the time. But it's also like constantly showing his self-doubt. He is not saying his grace. He's saying that I need help. I can't do this. The entire story is, can he get right one last song for this show? And he does, but like, he pushes people away in the process. I was going to say, it's great. I love that. I love that Sondheim is there, and it makes his life even more stressful. And mm-hmm. Sondheim calls him, and you think it's going to be great, but he still can't put the show on because too not mainstream and too expensive for the time. Now it would be on stage fine, like be more shows on Broadway, and that's fine. So it would work. But at the time, it couldn't at all. And that's so heartbreaking.
On the topic of him being egotistical, Jonathan does present himself as, yeah, I was an egotistical brat and a jerk when I was 30. Remember the musical of Tick, Tick, Boom, the one-man show that Jonathan Larson played in, came out 10 years after it's set. So he's able to look back with an eye of more maturity and be like, yeah, I was a terrible human being. And like, even in this movie, he straight up says things like, I'm the future of musical theater. And then he turns out to write two shows ever. And one of them, like, nobody had heard of? Okay, sure. People had heard of Tick, Tick, Boom. Just like...
Mainstream-wise, people hadn't heard of it.
Yeah, it's no Phantom. It's no Wicked. It's no Lion King. Or it's Tick, Tick, Boom. And like, people had heard of Rent and heard one song. Like, he is not the future of musical theater. Says that to a friend as just like a straight-up act of arrogance.
First off, I love in that scene when he says that to someone. It's someone random off the street. Someone ran off the street, comes to his house party.
I love that guy.
Like, I'm just here, like, what are you? I'm the future. And then he comes to like the last thing, he comes to the Tick, Tick, movies in the audience at the end. And I love that too, about like the most tragic part of being the future musical theater and how he wasn't, was he died before Rent happened. A lot of people do not know beforehand that he passed away like
the day before Rent premiered.
And that's heartbreaking. Like, also, all three of us are filmmakers. So imagine us making our masterpiece or our biggest film ever that would be a huge hit. But we just die right before it happens.
That would suck.
It would be sad to not see how your art affects the audience. But if you're making the art for yourself and out of love for the art, then, I mean, you've already seen it. You saw the workshops. You saw the rehearsals. You saw all that stuff. Jonathan is definitely not making art for himself. He is making art for the audience, which is not a problem. It's a wonderful thing. He's trying to make the world a better place. What's heartbreaking about it is that he never got to see the world be a better place because of him.
I want to say I make art for myself, but I also want people to see, I want to have that validation. We all do a little bit as filmmakers. We want to have the validation of people liking what we made. We want to have people be like, hey, that was a good job. What's next? Like, that's kind of what you inherently want a little bit, because we're doing this and not in a void. We're not making films in a vacuum.
Touching back on the idea of this being a love letter to musicals, I think that this is also Lin-Manuel Miranda's love letter to Jonathan Larson, because, and like, it's kind of subtle with how it's done, but you can tell if Jonathan had never become a success and Rent had never gotten made, then Lin probably never would have gotten his chance to have make In the Heights or Hamilton, and effectively both of them changing musical theater in ways that both of them never could have seen coming. And so he's just like, thank you for doing what you had done and giving me this opportunity.
I love the swimming. I love like his like routines he has to try and do better. I love that Rosa ignores his calls. I think that's like a great little problem he has to haggle with. I love that his power goes out the night before he's through his workshop. All these small little struggles that build on each other are fantastic. And I love that they had a bunch of cameos from Broadway stars in the diner scene. That's really fun.
I'm going to ramble about diegesis for a moment. Because like we were talking about how this show plays with diegesis. There are some songs that in any other musical would be non-diegetic. For anybody who doesn't know, diegesis is the world of the film, the in-universe stuff, the canon, if you will. Diegetic musical numbers are things that happen in-universe, that the characters can hear other characters singing. Think of like Breakin' Free from High School Musical versus Get Your Head in the Game from High School Musical. Like Breakin' Free is set up as an audition that somebody is supposed to hear or think of me from Phantom of the Opera or High Times, Hard Times from Newsies. And the non-diegetic musical numbers like Get Your Head in the Game or Masquerade or Carrying the Banner, they're all the filmmakers or creators trying to communicate what the characters are feeling and doing in the most effective way they can, which in this case is song and dance. Okay, with all that said, Boho Days, the one that goes, this is the life of Boba Bobo. In any other show, that would be a non-diegetic musical number. But because they've set up that all the characters in the room are musical theater lovers, and because they've set up that Jonathan, I mean, this is kind of how they set up, that Jonathan improvises musical theater songs off the top of his head all the time, you can tell this is actually happening in universe. That one guy who's random guy off the street who just showed up because this is a good party is actually hearing Jonathan sing. And because of that, one, you can tell that Jonathan loves musical theater. You can tell that everybody here loves musical theater. This is what they do in their spare, not just in their spare time, but like, this is how they live. This is just the thing that happens while they're doing dishes or the thing that happens while they're just existing and in between other things. You can tell that everybody in the room is willing to follow Jonathan during this scene. He sets the tone, he sets the beat, he sets the tune. He's the leader here and everyone is willing to follow him. And most of the movie is about everybody becoming not willing to follow him until finally he has to get them back on track. Like this movie, this one scene sets up his relationship with almost every other character in the show, especially Michael. Michael is the only person the entire song to sing along with Jonathan, which I don't know if you guys have done like those improv games of like singing two people singing the same song at the same time and trying to keep up with each other and trying to play off each other and trying to read each other's movements and trying to figure out what the next line is going to be, what the next word is going to be. Anybody who's done musical theater has probably done some sort of game like that. And you know, that is hard. But it's so much easier if you have a good rapport with the other person. You can play off of them and you can know what they're going to say. And Michael is the only person in the room with that good of rapport with him. Not even his girlfriend has that good of rapport with him. And so you really get to feel how close he is with Michael. And you get to feel how Jonathan is willing to make a song out of anything and with no ingredients. Like he could, there's a scene where he says, let's just do all the songs a cappella. And I'm like, dude, you could just like start having the characters go and start singing. And it would work because you know how to do that. But like, it's really setting up that he can do that, but he doesn't want to. He wants this big rock opera in the style of like Repo or something like that. And then later on, during the song about Michael, right at the end, when he's just figured out that Michael is HIV positive and he goes to the piano and starts playing, in most musicals, it would be kind of like, I don't know if this is diegetic or not. Like, it kind of lies in this weird realm between the diegeses. Because, sure, he's improvising this, but he's playing this, so, like, we don't know. Is he just playing piano and thinking of Michael? Like, in any other show, we'd be like, is he just playing piano and thinking of Michael? And, like, this is how they're presenting it? But in this show, it's pretty clear. No. He is actually singing. He is making up a song about Michael. And, like, this is how I act, too. That, like, I'll sit down to the piano and try to express my feelings through the piano and sometimes make up some words to it because that'll help me to express how I'm feeling in the moment. And this is his therapy. This is the only therapy session that he goes to in the entire movie. And he needs more therapy sessions throughout the movie. And like, you can feel that this is very therapeutic to him. And you can feel the just raw emotion of him not just singing about Michael, but improvising about Michael. The fact that usually non-diegetic songs become diegetic makes these songs so much more powerful, but it doesn't get in the way of allowing for non-diegetic songs. I think there's only one non-diegetic song in the entire musical. I think the only one that's non-diegetic is Sunday at the Diner.
I'm going to challenge you and say, why can't it be diegetic? Because in this world, because everyone's playing around with it too, it could be in this world that there's a little bit more fun musical vibes with it. A little bit.
I could see that. All the characters seem very not interested in joining in on a song with Jonathan there. And also, you know, the whole scene of like the wall falling off and him walking out of the diner like that. That doesn't seem like what the characters would do, but I could see that they do it anyway. I don't know. If there are some songs where it would be non-diegetic if it were in universe. The one that's like, I feel bad that you feel bad, that whole thing.
Therapy session. Like, yeah.
Yeah. If they were doing that in universe, we would be like, okay, yeah, that's non-diegetic. Actually, we might still think it's diegetic. Anyway,
well, here's the thing. Because
they make it diegetic by putting it in the stage performance at the end instead of having Alex and John, instead of having, I can't remember his girlfriend's name, instead of having Alex Shipp and Andrew Garfield singing it at that moment.
Exactly. That's why I'm saying every single thing is diegetic, because it's all part of the show. It's all a bit part of the Tick, Tick, Boom show.
Oh my gosh, I just realized, like, on that topic, like, there are two very different diegeses in this movie.
Exactly. They're all diegetic to the one show he's telling and doing the story for the audience.
There is Tick, Tick, Boom, the stage play, which is very diegetic. And then there is a completely different level of diegesis, which is Jonathan's flashbacks to the previous scenes, which he is communicating through Tick, Tick. Whoa!
Which also could be
played with diegesis the whole time.
And because I said at the very beginning, I feel like Andrew Garfield's playing a character playing John Larson. Everyone in those flashbacks in theory could also be actors playing those characters on the stage with him and interacting with the audience too. Because he's retelling this, and it's clearly not a one-man show in this version. Those could be the characters he's portraying and stuff as well. Therapy, that song is so much fun. That back and forth of like them arguing to the I feel bad that you feel bad about, I feel, yeah, that's fantastic.
I know that we were like trying to wrap up. If I may present a wrap-up question.
We have time, yeah, go ahead.
Who are some filmmakers who you would want to see do a big movie musical in a formalist style?
Edgar Wright.
Yes, I would love that. Like,
that'd be perfect.
I kind of want a Scott Pilgrim stage musical.
Matthew
Vaughn. Yes, he was the exact reason why I was going to bring up this question. I really want to see Matthew Vaughn do a musical. I also really want to see Matthew Vaughn do a heist movie.
I've told you about Josh before. Those are two favorite directors, so that's why.
Okay. I would love to. Oh gosh. I think it would be really interesting to see James Wan doing a musical. Like, he knows how to play with formalism. He knows how to play with the camera, and he knows how to do the subjective filmmaking that musicals need. But the kind of musical that he would do is not the kind of musical that Edgar Wright or Matthew Vaughn would do.
I would, especially after seeing his new film, Malignant, he does not care at all, like, on taking things seriously. So I think James Wan doing a musical could be so much fun. I don't know what the show would be. Maybe it could be like a Sweeney Todd kind of show, but it could be so much fun.
Like, I just saw a brand new Frankenstein musical, like, created by two people who live in my city. And I'm like, I could see James Wan putting on like a Frankenstein musical or a Jekyll and Hyde musical or something like that. And it would be so cool. Please not a Saw musical, though. I could see James Wan doing Repo the Genetic Opera. That could be cool.
To add on to that, for Spielberg's West Side Story coming out in, like, what is it, like 2 weeks now, do you think that he's going to embrace the formalism of it, or do you think that he's going to try to balance out the formalism with realism? Spielberg is obviously a very good filmmaker and knows what he's doing, but this is his first time doing musical, so I'm curious to see what both of your thoughts are.
I have a feeling it would be closer to Dear Evan Hansen than it would be to Tick, Tick, Boom in terms of style.
Yeah, I think that Spielberg would, you know, make a standard Spielberg movie, which is kind of like in the middle of realism and formalism.
It'll be weird. It'll be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. He'll like occasionally do like a dolly zoom, like in Jaws or something like that. I would love to see the Wachowskis do a musical.
Ooh. Especially after, I haven't seen Speed Racer, but like, they are filmmakers that know how to embrace formalism and we love this. Cause I think it's only Lana. I think she's the only one that's directing the new Matrix. So I don't know if both of them will work together again, but if they do, I would love a musical from the two of them.
Think of like V for Vendetta, like that style as a musical.
Michael Gondry, he made The Green Hornet and Eternal Sunshine. It looks like. And
ooh, that would be a mind
because
trip.
His absolute bonkers style would be perfect. I love that.
I know this sounds really stupid. I want to see Guy Ritchie do a musical. I know the reason that sounds stupid is because he did Aladdin.
No, he did not. That didn't happen.
I get what you're saying. I can 100% understand what you're saying. I would love that so much.
Gems.
Think of the very rhythmic style of King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. Every single scene in that is like, no, we are not here to get you to feel the emotion. We are here to be cool, and we are here to be rhythmic. I would love to see him do a musical.
I was just watching stuff from his two Sherlock Holmes movies with Robert Downey Jr. And like the way that he does the fight scenes, the choreography, the timing of everything, it's so well built up. And I think that he could do musicals really well. I don't know what exactly happened with Aladdin, but I hope that he learned his lesson with that first one, because he is going to be directing the second one. And I hope that he'll embrace the formalism of it more and have way more fun with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what we go to Guy Ritchie for.
I also want to say one last thing about Tick, Tick, Boom. That's a small little fun thing. I love in his session 4 coming up with names for products of like chemicals and stuff, whatever, the branding. First, that's what I think of America in actuality are the bad stuff, because the country has a lot of problems. And hearing the propaganda of like, bald eagle, it's George Washington, I'm like, this is very American, cool.
Oh, on the topic of that scene, one of the reasons why this movie feels like it moves so smoothly throughout different levels of diegesis, non-diegetic, diegetic, diegetic to a different level, it's because the movie itself keeps flowing through different levels of diegesis outside of the songs. It's not a movie that has songs in it. They keep using the format of a musical. Like during the focus group scene, when he says racism, genocide, etc., it's very clearly non-diegetic. He's looking directly at the camera. He's looking up. It gives us a completely different camera angle. It's a much more formalist camera angle. Like, it's a camera angle that can't exist in real life. Like, this is very clearly not a diegetic moment. And they have like a visual cue to make sure that you know when they're going into what style, so that once you go into a song, it doesn't feel weird for them to do that.
And I think that works better because, like I said from the beginning, we are in the frame of the fake audience watching the show. So when at that point, he's breaking the fourth wall as like an actor and saying lines. Fun little side note. Here's the next thing. Like on stage, you would do that.
Also, absolutely. He's doing asides.
Yeah. Now I think we got to move into the next segment and the last segment of the podcast, which is super weird stories. Very fun. I kept it musical themed here with the character of Music Meister. So I don't know if either of you ever heard the character. I think I told Josh about who this was the other day, potentially, but Music Meister is a DC Comics character that was, like Harley Quinn, first introduced in a cartoon.
He's the guy in that Flash episode duet where he's
yep,
with
I'll get,
Supergirl
I'll get
into, and yep. they go and strap in TV land.
Yep. So I'll get into that in a minute. Music Meister, for those of you who aren't aware, we're using this podcast, we have a thing called Super Weird Stories, where I'll tell you, Josh, about a weird or wholesome or problematic, which there have been some of those, stories in either comic book history or just superhero history. We had a whole episode of one before called Phoenix Jones about a real-life superhero in Seattle. And this is a little tangent about Music Meister. Now, I'm going to put in the chat, in our Discord chat, a link to a picture of how he first appeared ever in Batman the Brave and the Bold. He had a green tie and a very fun outfit, and he was voiced by Neil Patrick Harris, which is just perfect. I love that.
He's got a look, and Neil Patrick Harris voicing him is perfect.
I think it's perfect as well. He was created by Mike Jelinek and James Tucker. He first appeared in the episode of Mayhem of the Music Meister in that show, and then he first appeared in a comic book sequel. To that same episode, which I love when comic books do tie-ins to like TV or movies as well to get more detail and things. I love that. Now, he's a weird character, but he doesn't really have any hard set powers like in any medium. Most comic characters, even when they go from medium to medium, like or like show to show or something, their powers stay relatively the same. Like Superman's always gonna have super strength, heat vision, like flight, freeze breath, etc. But no, he's just like vague songs. For the most part. And then he appeared a few years back on an episode of The Flash and Supergirl, which he was the villain, but wasn't a villain. What his job was to do was to put Supergirl, her boyfriend Mon-El, Iris West, and Barry Allen all into comas through song, where they will have dreams, like interconnected dreams that are all musical styling. And all of them are perfect singers, because all of them are on Glee and other things too, played by Darren Criss from Glee. And what they did was the whole thing was about love and fixing relationships. And it felt like the silliest side, like sideway from the rest of the show was happening. There was dire stakes happening. That season, Iris was about to be killed by a like future version of Barry, and it was like high stakes, big monster. Then we have a side tangent of just, let's just dance and sing. Why not? In fun dream comas of songs.
I kind of love that when they did that, they used the Trapped in TV Land format to progress the character arcs. Because the point of the episode was to get Barry and Iris to actually like each other again, because they've been going through a lot of relationship struggles through the entire season.
Right.
I assumed the same thing with Supergirl and her boyfriend, but I hadn't been watching that show. And so, like, it wasn't just a random filler episode of fun for the sake of fun. It actually also progressed the plot. That said, fun for the sake of fun is always nice. It's just, like you said, kind of a weird time to do fun for the sake of fun. But, like, fun for the sake of fun was how they were going to progress the character arcs thing.
And what's weird about that is on Supergirl, also Mon-El was played by her now husband. They were dating at the time. And it's very fascinating because in the show, they break up permanently, I think. And it's like, why do this whole thing about, you know, finding love again through a song with Darren Criss as music meister? They are a character who has appeared in very little, but he's a metahuman, like in comics. And his ability is to cause every living being who hears his voice to burst into song and dance. That is his consistent power in comic books now, which is amazing. Everyone who hears his voice thinks they're in a musical temporarily.
As I remember, because I haven't watched any of the CW shows aside from, like, I think the first half of the first season of Flash. So when I saw, like, the ads for the musical episode that we're talking about on TV, I was just like, what happened to the show? Is this permanent? What's going on? And it's the same feeling that I get every time, like, Riverdale does a musical episode. It's just completely out of left field. It makes no sense, but they're having a fun time.
And about this character again, he appeared in Batman Brave and Bold. And in there, he was able to, on cue, change his outfits like a musical actor can just on change his outfits for quick changes. And he did it in different eras of musical people. Like, he just changes an Elvis outfit.
Changes into a Frank Sinatra, Gene Kelly, crooner outfit.
Right. And that's just something he just did. And, like, a Cab Calloway Zoot suit was one of the things he changed into. And I love that. He has no alter ego. He is just Music Meister. There is no other name for him. He is solely Music Meister. And his origin is unknown. And he's been on almost nothing really since then. And I think that's a shame. Bring back Music. Make him in a villain of a Justice League movie. Just for fun.
Yeah, you ever think about how, like, as soon as you announce that Music Meister will be a character in your thing, you are saying so much about your tone. Like, can you imagine, like, Zack Snyder's Batman fighting Music Meister? No, that doesn't fit the tone. That said, I would absolutely love to see that. Or as soon as you announce that that Music Meister is going to appear. Or like, even Matt Reeves, the Batman, just not the right time for Music Meister. Just, like, as soon as you announce this character even exists, you say everything you need to know about the tone of your show.
That being said, you can twist him in creepier ways, I feel like. He's inherently funny and fun. So if you twist that too much, is it still the same character? And this one is a character who, in DC Comics, shouldn't really exist, but does, and I love him.
He's also just a character who really only works in an audio medium.
Right.
Like, film is an audiovisual medium, cartoons, stage plays. Like, I'm trying to imagine him in a comic. Like, you said he's been in comics, but, like, how?
Do you want to see a picture? Let me pull a picture of this.
I assume that they just, like, have music notes and like, have those little lines on the outside of speech bubbles that, like, show that a character is singing, kind of like they do when a character starts singing Christmas Carol, but, like, I'm like, that feels different in a different media. It works fundamentally different in a different media.
Here's the comic book I think I just found. I'll put it in the chat as well. It's the same style of Batman Brave and Bold in the comic. Looks like he tied into. So it's still that same zany, fun environment. Here's some fun quotes from him, though. Bullies used to pick on me because I sang in choir. What a quote. We also have, but something very strange occurred when I kept singing higher. The ruffians around me quickly fell into a trance. And it was then, with wicked glee, I made those puppets dance. And that's the first quote. And the second one is, the Music Meister sings the song that the world needs to hear.
What a character.
Why are you making him sound creepy?
He's written in rhyme, and Neil Patrick Harris voiced that. So that's amazing. I want to hear that episode now.
Same.
I'll find a link and send it to y'all. We can watch it sometime. Hunter, what are you making right now? What do you want to promote?
So we are in the last week of my found footage Dracula Kickstarter. So when Bram Stoker wrote Dracula, he was playing around with the idea of an epistolary novel, which is a novel that's written only in letters. And he took that a little further and made it a novel written in letters and journal entries and notes and newspaper clippings. And I was like, the only way to capture it, that part of the spirit of the novel, to capture how it feels to read Dracula, like, that's found footage. He found evidence for a thing that happened written by the original people who were involved. And I'm like, then let's make it a found footage movie, but let's play with what found footage can do. So it's not just like 90s camcorders. We're going to make Jonathan's journal a TikTok, and we're going to make Mina and Elizabeth's letters into Marco Polo's, and we're going to make Van Helsing's notes about vampires into a conspiracy podcast that he streams on YouTube, kind of like this episode.
Just I love about that.
Conspiracies instead of this. And we're going to try to get a news reporter to like do a news anchor segment like they would do on the news, because like that's how they do it in the book. They have a newspaper clipping. That's the way to capture the spirit of it. But from there, if it's going to be found footage, Dracula can't appear on film. And so we're going to be really leaning into this, just this like psychological horror aspect of the novel that very few other Dracula movies lead into, of showing like, okay, in the 1931 Bela Lugosi Dracula movie, there's a line. It is one of the weirdest lines I've ever heard in a movie, where Jonathan says, I kid you not, but what's Dracula got to do with vampires? We're going to be really leaning into that side of just like the ambiguity and uncertainty of like, is he really a vampire? Is he a werewolf? Is he a weirdo? Is he just like this really polite politician and everyone else is paranoid? And just giving the audience a sense of paranoia and dread and uncertainty by leaning into the psychological horror aspect of it.
Because I love that.
All of that, one of our Kickstarter perks is getting, this is like the highest tier of the perk, is getting a personalized in-character message from one of the cast members. So like you can get a message from Jonathan of him begging you to save him from Dracula, or a message from Mina being a Marco Polo that's like, hey, just wanted to check in on you, bestie. I haven't heard much from any of the others, but I wanted to know if you had any information, that kind of stuff.
That made me picture like just Dracula doing a cameo, like on Cameo, like the website.
Yes.
Also, yes. Fun fact, that I did the show Dracula in ninth grade.
Nice.
Yeah, like it was really fun. So I always like love the character in that story because that's been attached to me now. So I'm really excited for this film you're making. I love it. You also reached your base goal already, so you're making a film about what now?
Yeah, we reached our base goal, so we're able to make a short film. And on the topic of reaching our base goal, we have enough money to make it like a 20-30 minute short film. Our goal is to get enough money to make a 90-minute feature that adapts the entire novel instead of like having to gloss over anything. And to get that, we're going to have to get like $2,000 more in the next 2 weeks. But that said, we've reached our base goal.
It's doable.
We're going to make something no matter what. And thank you so much for the help.
Yeah, of course. And everyone, please go check out this Kickstarter. It'll be in the show notes down below.
By the time that this audio goes out, the Kickstarter will be ending, but you can still help out him by donating to his Venmo at Hunter Ferris or his Cash App, Wholesome Film Talk, but this time talk is actually spelled like talk, T-A-L-K, instead of T-O-K. So please donate there with the little note saying from Geek Speak Podcast to the film or something along those lines. Awesome. Sorry for the delay in episodes.
Go check it out. Also, Hunter, where can people find you?
You can find me on TikTok at Wholesome Film Talk. Talk is spelled T-O-K. Because it's like TikTok.
Josh, where can people find you?
People, you can find me Twitter, J_Rudy28, Instagram, J_Rudy16, Letterboxd at Nerd4Film28, and YouTube at Josh Rudolph.
And that's a lot.
I'm places. You can find me on Twitter at The Theater Nerd, on TikTok as well at That Nerd Theater, which I also run the Nerd Talk Productions Twitter and other socials accounts, which is where we have the podcast, at Nerd Talk Productions YT@gmail.com. Please email into us. Give us questions, like comments, concerns. If this is your first time listening, email us and say hi, first time listener, and tell us a bit about yourself. Be fun. I also run the Twitter at nerdtalk_prod and with the hashtag GeekSpeakPod. Tweet at us. All right. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Thank you very much.
Bob.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well,
HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.